All right. My name is Christopher Wells. I am 18 years old, and today is November 27th, 2018. I am speaking with David Wells, who is my father. We are recording this interview just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. All right. Let's start off with this. Can you tell me about your childhood, just in general?
Well, yes, I can. My childhood may be considered a little bit different than the typical nuclear family. As of today, at this recording, I am 50 years old, so my childhood was a long time ago. And at the time, I was raised by my grandparents, my maternal grandparents, versus mom and some dads, like most of my friends were. So, my childhood began when I was born in Los Angeles, California in 1968, and within a couple of months of my birth, I was brought to Nashville by my grandmother, who was actually my father's father's second wife. So this gets very complicated very quickly. All that being said is I was raised by my grandparents. So most people refer to moms and dads. I'll talk about my grandfather this and my grandmother that. Other than that, I was raised on the west side of Nashville, went to public school, in elementary school, had a creek in my front yard. We had a small farm of about 40 acres. So I got to have a little bit of a rural life, all within 10 miles of a metropolis. What else about my childhood would be applicable to your question?
What would you say you were like as a child? How would you describe yourself looking back on everything?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm an only child, so it was a little bit lonely. And referring back to the fact that I was raised by my grandparents, didn't have many people to play with. I lived on a farm. Our nearest neighbor was an elderly lady, and her grandson lived about a half a mile away. So he was probably my closest friend when I was very young. And he was, I think, 6 years older than me. So I spent quite a bit of time playing by myself. I would go to the creek. I would stomp around in the woods, try to push dead trees over and flip rocks looking for crawdads. That was about it.
Okay, well, you said you were born in California, but you moved to here in Nashville pretty soon after you were born, correct?
Yes.
Well, you've told me sometimes, but you went back to California. How does that play into everything?
Okay. When I was born, my mother and father were not married, and I was very ill when I was born and required certain surgery. And either by the fact that my parents weren't married and that the state had to spend that money on me, I'm not exactly sure what was the cause, but the result was I was considered a ward of the state. So I was actually a child of the state of California and was supposed to stay there. But my grandfather in Tennessee and his wife, my grandmother, flew out to California and took me. They basically kidnapped me from the state of California and brought me to Nashville. And in doing so, that kept the state from being able to place me into foster care or putting me up for adoption. That was their best attempt at trying to keep me inside the family. So I know they did it with best intentions, but it was kind of a quirky situation to where I ended up being here in Tennessee when I was recovering after my surgery. So I was probably by this time 6 months or maybe 9 months old. And the legal ramifications were that my grandparents wanted to adopt me as their own. They wanted to legally adopt me so they could make decisions for me. And in doing so, the state required them and me to return to California at least once a year. And I think there were times we'd fly back out there 2 or 3 times a year every year. So in an odd sort of way, I grew up both in Nashville and on American Airlines, flying back and forth between Nashville and Los Angeles.
So that's kind of two sides of the spectrum. You grew up kind of in a farm or on an airplane or in California out in the desert, if I remember correctly.
My father at the time was staying out in the desert. I would say that most of my time was spent in the Travelodge Hotel near the Los Angeles County Courthouse. However, my mother was from California. In fact, I think my father was born in California too. I forgot about that one. But my mother's family was there in California. They lived in Temecula, which is southeast of the Los Angeles area. And there were times that I would get to go visit my grandparents out there, Grandpa Sam and Grandma Ruby. So there were times I'd spend out there. They were also in the desert. They were on a ranch, which was part of the Earl Stanley Gardner property. He was the majordomo or the head ranch hand at Earl Stanley Gardner's property. So there were times that I spent out there as well. I am rambling.
That's okay. That's the point of this. So, you grew up here in Nashville, but you did move back to California periodically, fairly so.
I'll say we traveled to California.
Back and forth.
We traveled in the summers. I don't recall missing any school in Tennessee. I lived, schooled, and Christmased in Nashville, and spent summers in California.
So you were definitely born in California, but you just would refer, you would say that you grew up here in Tennessee.
I consider myself a native of Nashville, Tennessee, yes.
Somebody once said it doesn't really, it matters where you're born, but it really counts on where you grew up.
Well, so, this is where I've grown up, definitely.
All right. Well, speaking of travel, not just to California, you have mentioned in the past how much you did travel, not just between Nashville and outside of Los Angeles, but just you traveled a lot more to a lot of different places.
We did, yes. Would you like me to talk about that some?
Yes.
Yes. Well, until from basically when my grandparents kidnapped me from California until the age seven, we traveled back and forth. For legal reasons, my grandparents finally were given custody, not just custody of me, but they actually were permitted to adopt me when I was 7 years old. Or no, I'm sorry. At 7 years old, my mother and my grandmother Ruby, were killed in an automobile accident in Temecula. And subsequently, and not necessarily within a few months, but perhaps by the next year or so, the courts then saw fit to allow my grandparents in Tennessee to adopt me as their son. So legally, my grandmother and grandfather became my mother and father. All that's a preamble to say that after that, we chose to spend our summers not traveling to California, but my grandparents were very interested in traveling to Europe. And we began to travel to Europe just about every summer. We would go to Britain quite a bit, United Kingdom, England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales. We did a European trip one time where we flew into London, went to Paris. I think we took train and bus and ended up down in Rome and then flew back. And that was a structured guided tour, and my grandparents hated it. So from then on, my grandfather would plan his trips on his own, and we would fly into a big city, and then he would rent a car, and then we would drive out into the countryside and just sort of wing it from there. So yeah, I did travel a fair bit from probably age 7, 8, 9, 10 on up till about 16.
So all this travel, and like you say, not super structured, there's got to be some stories or lessons or fables that you either witnessed or were a part of. Tell me about some of them.
Okay, yeah. There were a few when I was younger, but probably... Well, okay, one quickie that when I was young, on that trip that my grandfather really disliked when we, the guided tour, we are not early risers, and my grandfather would like to take his time in the mornings. He would get up, he would go eat his breakfast, he would shower, go eat his breakfast, then come back and shave and dress for the day. So we really didn't get out of a hotel room until probably 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. This worked very poorly on our guided tour trip because I remember vividly we were in Paris and we heard a banging on the door, and we checked the time and it was about 8:30 or 9 in the morning, and I came to the door and it was the tour guide lady saying, "Are you ready to get on the bus?" We had not gotten up, we had not bathed, we had not eaten breakfast, my grandfather had not shaved, and we had to rush and get all of our luggage packed up and rush down to the waiting bus full of all the other people on the tour with us. And that didn't go well. We were grumpy for a day or two after that one. But one of the most vivid memories that I have from a trip to Europe was when I was 16 or 17. My grandfather and I were traveling alone this time. By this point in time, my grandmother was fairly, she was ready to stay home. She didn't like to travel as much at this point in time. But my grandfather and I traveled to, we flew into Germany. And I think we were going to do a Germany and Belgium tour. Or we wanted to take a trip to Germany and Belgium. We flew into Germany, rented a car. Turns out that my grandfather's international driver's license wasn't valid, but I had been driving through a learner's permit and hardship license for the minimum 3 years, and I was then permitted to drive the rental car, which seemed really unusual and probably wasn't legal, but I drove anyway. And I got to drive our little Ford Fiesta on the German Autobahn, and boy, those cars go fast. But my grandfather then decided, let's go to Czechoslovakia, which this was 1990, I believe. And at that point in time, Czechoslovakia was still part of the Soviet Union.
It was still Czechoslovakia. It wasn't split up yet.
Yeah, it was. It was behind the Iron Curtain.
Yeah.
And with all the travels I'd done with my grandfather, I'd never been behind the Iron Curtain before. And I was a little hesitant, but didn't know quite what to expect. I'd only heard rumors. And in fact, I'd gone to Lipscomb High School, and during our chapel services, people would come and tell stories about their mission trips to Europe and behind the Iron Curtain. So I kind of had a slight perspective, but it was a little bit skewed or a little bit biased in one direction. Well, as we drove there, it was a foggy morning, and I was following the map and couldn't see very far. But in the distance, as we got closer to the border, I began to see these really tall concrete fence posts. And through the fog came the barbed wire fence and the guard towers, and the road actually serpentined left and right. It didn't go straight through. And it was everything those spy novels said it would be like. I was really mesmerized. Oh yeah, and the color went away. It is as if you took a slider and desaturated the color from the pictures you'd seen in the rest of Europe. It just, everything went gray. So we went through the checkpoint, got a 2-day visa or a 3-day visa to travel into Budapest. Wait, I said Czechoslovakia. We were going to go through Bratislava. We ended up going into a different border crossing into Hungary. Sorry, wait.
Yes.
Yeah, Budapest and Hungary. Yep, that's it. So we decided to go to Budapest instead. I think there was like some Christmas fair or something. This was a winter trip, and Harvey wanted to go to that. So we drove from that border crossing to Budapest, which I discovered is actually two separate cities divided by a river. There's Buda and Pest. And we got there, and the countryside, driving through the countryside, it was really pretty dull. It was not big city. It was just rural, not a lot of industry at all. We got into the city, found a hotel, stayed at the hotel, ate food, walked around at night. It was very cold. Got up the next morning, and Harvey's like, "All right, let's go back now." So we started to drive back the way we came. He said, no, let's go differently. Let's go a different way. So as we were going along on the motorway, he said, there was a small town. I wanted to go through the small town. So we got off the main motorway, drove into a smaller town, and it was market day. So he said, let's walk through the market and see what they have. So I found the car, the plots, the square that we could park at. We parked, we got out, and started walking along this market. And there was a stall of seller was, he had lace. And then the next stall had shoes. And the next stall, I think he had potatoes and cabbage. And I'm not making this up. And then the one after the potatoes and cabbage sold lace. And then there were shoes and there was potatoes and cabbage. And it was as if this market only sold three things, but there was a dozen or two dozen sellers, vendors selling these same items. But there was a department store that was open, and my grandfather said, let's go in and see if they have a restaurant, because it was about time for lunch. So we stepped into this department store, and as an adult, I look back and say, it looks a lot like the North Korean department stores, you know, where you would walk in and it was mostly empty square footage, and there was one display case with four items in it. It was really spare. It was not like the modern stores, like going into Kroger or Walmart and seeing just floor-to-ceiling aisles full of all kinds of things to buy. It was very spare and sparse. But we walked through and started to go out another door, and my grandfather, being the southern gentleman he was, said, oh, no, we can't go out. We have to go back out the door we came in, which is a tradition or some fear of bad.
You don't want to wander where you're not supposed to.
No. I think it's a, trying to think of the phrase. It's not a wives' tale. It was a custom, or you didn't want any bad spirits, bad juju. If you came in the door, you went out the door you came in. So he abruptly turned around and started back down the hallway we were walking. And I turned around, and there was a man who bumped into me. And I said, excuse me, sir, I apologize. And he said, no problem. He turned and looked at the counter, and we walked by. And we went back out to the car, got in our car, drove another 20, 30 minutes back to the border. And when we got to the border crossing, leaving the border, getting in was fairly easy. Going out, there was more cars backed up, and were doing thorough inspection of the vehicles. And when we got up to the initial border guard, we handed him our passports and our 2-day visa. And he looked at it, and then he looked over at the building, and there were some men standing there at the door of the building, and he said, he just pointed. He didn't really say anything, but he pointed to another parking area.
Yeah.
So we didn't get to go with everybody else. He took us off to the side. So we got further inspection. So we pulled over to the side. They told us to get out. We opened up the doors, opened up the trunk, and they started looking around. And they didn't see anything. This guard looks back over at the two men standing at the building. And there was a third man there, and he was the same guy that was in the department store.
He's the one that bumped into you.
He's the one that bumped into us. So I said, Grandpa, that's the same guy that was at the department store. He's like, no, that's silly. You've read too many James Bond books. You're being silly about it. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure it's the same guy, because I bumped into him when we turned around in that hallway. Well, they didn't find anything in the car, and our papers were in order, so they waved us on through. And after that, nothing unusual happened. But we then, after we got back home, I think that spring or summer, we ran into friends of ours that were from Germany, Carl and Schneiders. We mentioned that story to them, and they said, oh yes, almost always, if it's not a planned visit, if someone's coming in without a pre-planned visit, they tend to send a minder with you. So yeah, you were followed the whole time. So I was not crazy. We really were followed by that guy. So that was an interesting story of traveling outside of my comfort zone to another country on the other side of the world.
And getting followed through that country.
And getting followed, yeah.
It doesn't happen a whole lot, at least you wouldn't think so.
Hopefully that's changed now.
You never know.
You never know. But
anyway, so, yes, travel, fair bit. You experienced... you definitely experienced things people wouldn't normally experience if they lived on a farm in West Nashville. You probably saw a lot. You definitely got to be around a lot like that, getting followed through the Soviet country. How would you say those experiences helped you become the person you are today? Not just like you got to watch people from different parts of the world, but in a way, how did you find yourself, or did you find yourself in your travels?
Eventually, yes. Being from a middle class, white, comfortably wealthy family, growing up on the west side of Nashville, things were pretty easy for me. Didn't have things very hard. Traveling to Europe, seeing what it was like for other people, you realize how different things can be. I will throw in one more little anecdotal story. When I was a little bit younger, we were in Lisbon, Portugal. And my grandfather liked to walk a fair bit. And we stepped out of our hotel room. And instead of walking down the road and over a pedestrian overpass, he said, let's just cut across here. We cut across a little dirt pathway in a empty lot. And this little girl younger than me ran out in the middle of the pathway, squatted down and made a little puddle in the dirt, and then ran back inside the little metal building she was in. And at that point, my world changed, and I realized this little girl just ran out into the dirt path to go to the bathroom because she didn't have a bathroom in her house. And then I realized that metal building she went in and out of was her house. It's wasn't even something we put our cows in, and that was her home. And that, I think that probably was one of those seminal moments in my life when I realized how different the world could be, how similar we are, and yet how different we can be, and how big the world is. And I'll contrast that with one time we were walking on the streets of London, and there were two teenage or young 20 or 20 somethings young ladies walking towards us, and they had a Vanderbilt sweatshirt on, and I pointed and I said, hey, look, Vanderbilt. And my grandfather said, hey, Donna, I know your dad. And we're halfway across the world, and there's somebody my grandfather knows. So it's a small world, but it's also a big world. And we're a whole lot alike, but we're also a lot different.
So you, judging from that, you've learned things for sure from travels, and as a person. Now knowing that you learn to appreciate things a little bit more after seeing things like that, learning how big the world is and also how small, in what way did that help you come to appreciate what you had? Like, what would you consider yourself to be most grateful for after seeing more of the world than just the plane ride to and from California, a courthouse, and then a farm in West Nashville?
Well, when I was younger, it was obviously, it hit me where I realized I've got more things than a lot of people, but I was still fairly young and naive. But as I've matured as an adult, I look back and realize how much stuff doesn't matter, how much family matters, how much values matter, how much who you are is what you do, and when you have children that you want to raise and teach them the right things, you tell them the stories and you tell them what the right thing to do is, but you want to do the right things so that they learn to do them as well, and hopefully they get it. They are mature enough to say, oh, I understand it now. I have a better perspective on things.
Well, For the longest time, you've told me and Michael and Andrew, don't ever forget where you come from. And obviously you haven't, because you still remember that you're born in California, and you know that you weren't a textbook child from a nuclear family. But if you were talking to your teenage self from where you are now, would you say that to them? Would you tell yourself not to forget where you come from? Or what else would you tell them? What advice would you dispense to yourself? What wisdom would you have?
Well, yes, I definitely want to tell them pretty much everything I've told you guys. You know, be kind, considerate, don't forget where you came from. But in my maturity as a 50-year-old, I look back and say, put yourself in other people's shoes. Be more emotionally connected. Understand that despite how big the world is and all the differences we have, we're a lot more alike than we are different. And I did not see that when I was younger, but the older I get, the more I realize we have a lot more in common than we want to admit. And we should accept that and celebrate it, not pick at those differences. I wish I could tell myself that.
Well, on the topic of talking to your past self, what would you say if your past self didn't totally understand that as you do now, which is not uncommon because with age comes wisdom, what would you consider the dumbest thing you ever did after all these travels, seeing all that you do, understanding what you did then and what you do now? You may not have realized it when it happened, but what would you consider the dumbest, or like, what's the dumbest thing you ever did?
Well, I was gonna say the time I made a pipe bomb just for fun, but there was also a time when I stuck my hand out the door to grab one of those little flags I used to mark pipes in the road without thinking that my fingers might get scraped off. Luckily they didn't. So the dumbest thing I ever did was, by the time I was old enough to go to college, I thought I was smarter than everybody else, and I thought I already had it figured out. And I didn't realize that I was simply a big fish in a relatively small pond until I was probably 35 years old. So acting grown up and mature and not being grown up and mature is probably the stupidest, dumbest thing I've done. Now at 50, I'm probably a little grumpier and a little more fussy about things, but probably it's because I'm thinking about the dumb things I did when I was younger, wishing I could correct myself, guide myself, which I can't. So maybe that's why I tell you guys to do what I tell you guys to do as often as I do.
We don't mind. It's important to understand that and to learn, at least at some point, whether you're 12 or 35, as long as you do learn it, I think that's what really matters.
I appreciate your openness to it, but in time, time will tell. It takes time. I think you'll understand more. I appreciate how much you understand now, and I'm sure you will understand more as you mature.
Well, we're about out of time, but to finish this off, understanding where you came from, how do you think you got here to where you are now today? You have definitely traveled distance wise, a long way, but also as a person, you've grown and been through a lot. But now I ask you, looking back on all of it, not having assurance of whether or not you'd be here today, what would you change? Would you do anything differently with all the wisdom you have now, understanding what you experienced, what you learned, what you were taught? What would you do differently, if anything?
Well, we weren't wealthy, but I did grow up well off, and I probably did have a silver spoon in my mouth, meaning that I knew I could get away with things. Being adopted by my grandparents, I knew that my grandmother would let me do things I shouldn't do. And as much as she loved me, I think that helped me. It kept me. It allowed me to prevent myself from maturing early enough so I could get away with more for longer. I wish that I had not taken advantage of that as long as I did. Because when I married your mother when I was 25, I was immature, and I needed to grow up more. And God bless her soul, Mom loved me anyway and saw the potential that I could be a decent person and a good husband and a good father. And over time, I have learned to do that. So I don't know if I could have changed much then that would change me who I am now. But I can see the change that I had to exact in myself from there till now. And I'm certainly not done, and I know I have a lot further to go, but I don't want to change anything in the past that would change who I am now to be where I am with you guys. So, no, I don't want to change anything.
Well, I guess that speaks for itself. Thank you for doing this.
You're very welcome. Thank you for including me in this.
All right. Thank you and good night. Yes.